What's up, everybody? Welcome to Your Favorite Fight. I'm your host, David Golden. Right up front, I want to say thank you all very much for checking out the podcast. Thank you for subscribing, leaving reviews on iTunes. That's super awesome. If you haven't done that yet, please jump on iTunes, leave me a 5-star written review. It's super helpful for me. It helps the metrics of the show. It really makes a huge difference in who sees this podcast on an iTunes page and other places where it's promoted. So please do that if you haven't already. If you're not on iTunes and you want to help out a little bit, please just tell a couple people about the podcast. Let them know that you like it. Let them know you're listening. Let them know that they should be listening. That would really go a long way in helping me out. So if you guys want to do that and show a little support, that would be great. You're more than welcome to reach out to me online on social media. You can hit me up on Twitter at @DavidGoldenMMA. You can email me if you want, DavidGoldenMMA@gmail.com. If you want to get on the podcast, you feel like I should talk about a specific fight or talk about an issue that we haven't talked about yet, let me know. I'm gonna have Jake Smith back on soon, and Jake and I, as you guys know, love to talk shit about almost anything when it comes to the fight game. So, you know, let me know what you guys want to hear us talk about. We'd love to, you know, dish on whatever you guys are interested in. So please, yeah, hit me up, and thanks again for all the support. This week, I'm flying solo, don't have a guest pinned down, so I'm going to do my best to fill up the hour for you and talk a little bit about UFC Fight Night Pittsburgh, and talk about UFC 216, which is coming up here pretty quick. I believe it's October 7th, so right around the corner. Anyway, let's get into it and talk a little bit about this last UFC Fight Night card that was just this past Saturday. This card had a lot of really fun fights on it, but it was really, to me, what this card was the return of Luke Rockhold. I'm a big fan of Luke Rockhold. I think he's an incredibly talented fighter, and I was really eager to see him come back and see what shape he would be in and how he would perform. He certainly didn't disappoint. He came in and dominated against David Branch, a guy who the UFC brought in from World Series of Fighting. He was a 2-division champion in World Series of Fighting. He, I think he hadn't lost a fight in something like 6 years. He did have a prior stint in the UFC, but a very talented guy. Pretty well-rounded, has good jiu-jitsu skills, very athletic, heavy-handed, decent striking, you know. But quite honestly, he is not in the same stratosphere as Luke Rockhold. Luke Rockhold, realistically, is probably the best middleweight in the world. You know, I'll catch a little flack for saying that because he did lose to Michael Bisping, I know. But anybody who's watched Michael Bisping fights, you're not look at Michael Bisping and say, oh, this guy's going to knock everybody out. You've seen how his fights go. He's a grinder. He doesn't knock dudes out all the time, and that's not really his thing. He did knock out Luke Rockhold. I would say it's a bit of a fluke. You know, Luke Rockhold has had 2 losses in the whole time he's been in the UFC. He dominated in Strikeforce, came over to the UFC, immediately started doing well, but he did have a fluke loss to Vitor Belfort. But this was at the time when Vitor Belfort was using testosterone replacement therapy and was considerably more jacked than he should have been for his age. He was not rocking the dad bod. He was looking really good. Came in throwing some spin and shit, kicked Luke Rockhold in the face, call it a night. You know, that's the type of thing that can happen in a cage fight. I get it. And if you're the best in the world, you're supposed to be ready for that. I totally understand. Luke obviously wasn't ready for it, but he turned around and he rips off something like 5 or 6 fights in a row, including dominating Chris Weidman. You know, people say that when Luke Rockhold fought Chris Weidman, it was really back and forth, but I didn't really see it that way. I've watched that fight a couple of times, and I just don't see what Chris Weidman has for Luke Rockhold. Luke's striking is better. It's more crisp. His kicks are unbelievable. You know, in the middleweight division, nobody has the sidekick like Luke Rockhold. So it's, you know, it's a tool that he's used very successfully. So, you know, he's just a dominant fighter. I mean, his top game is ridiculous. You know, he's got a ton of submission wins. He's a very well-rounded fighter, and he's somebody who I look at and I think, man, he could genuinely be a champion for a really long time if he would button up these really minor holes in his game. Obviously leaving your hand down and leaving an opening, you know, I don't want to say throwing lazy strikes. He wasn't throwing lazy strikes, but he certainly wasn't prepared for the strikes that were going to be returned. You know, the couple times he showed weakness inside the cage, it's been when people come at him pretty aggressively. And in this fight last weekend, David Branch did have a little success in the first round, coming straight at Luke Rockhold, throwing combinations, catching him off guard, backing him up. But I mean, that's really going to be effective against a lot of guys. I mean, unless your counterpunching is, you know, pinpoint accurate like Conor McGregor, and you're able to catch a guy, super fast guys, they're stepping in on you, you know, then you're going to likely get hit in the face, and it's not going to be good for you. And nobody backing straight up is generally fighting incredibly well. So I wouldn't say it's a weakness for Rockhold, but it's certainly something that other fighters are going to look to exploit moving forward. But I think the really interesting thing about this fight, after Luke wins this fight, is what do you do with Luke Rockhold now? You know, what does the UFC really do with him? The options are super limited. You know, they still have him ranked number 3. You know, Michael Bisping has this belt that he's had forever, hasn't defended yet, and he's, you know, he's set to defend it at UFC 217 against GSP, which is, you know, I mean, it's a cash grab, let's be honest. I don't think people really expect this to be this incredible fight. GSP coming off this tremendous layoff, Michael Bisping off of a pretty decent layoff. You know, if GSP comes in and is dominant, it's likely going to be a 5-round wrestle fest, and you know, I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be classic GSP if that's the case, I would imagine. Michael Bisping has proven himself hard to finish, and he's proven that his wrestling defense is really very good. So I mean, it could be a hard fought win for GSP, or you know, Michael Bisping is just maybe he's the fresher fighter and he can avoid the takedowns and he can wear down GSP the way he has so many of his other opponents. You know, if his striking isn't sharp, obviously Bisping can catch him. And, you know, GSP has been wobbled in a number of fights, and there's no reason why Michael Bisping couldn't do that. He's going to be bigger than most of the guys GSP has fought. GSP is coming up to 185 pounds from 170 pounds, and Michael Bisping is fighting at 185, but he has fought as high as 205. So, you know, you're not, if you're GSP, you're not necessarily used to fighting guys that size. Not to say Bisping is huge, but, you know, let's be honest here. When you're fighting a bunch of guys who are making 170 and then you're fighting guys who are cutting to 185, there's a difference. And there's a reason GSP never wanted to move up in weight to fight Anderson Silva, because he knew it would be too difficult for him to move back down to 170. He said that over and over again. And he's mentioned, you know, how big guys like Anderson Silva really are, you know, before they cut the weight. Luke Rockhold this week coming out saying that very thing, saying, you know, hey, 185 is where I want to stay. I want to get my title back. I want to fight these fights, but eventually I'm moving up to 205 because this weight cut sucks. And Luke Rockhold's a big dude, you know, so 205 makes sense, I think, for him. You know, I see it in the future for a lot of these guys like Chris Weidman. He's a gigantic guy for 185 pounds. And, you know, the older you get, the tougher that's going to be. Some people can cut weight like nobody's business. You know, you look at like Chael Sonnen. He's been able to cut weight his whole career. And, you know, he really looks at it as a science. I've heard him talk about it in person. It's really interesting. Other guys, you know, who are wrestlers hate cutting weight. Dan Henderson, for example, the guy hates cutting weight. He can make 185, but, you know, obviously he's got a lot of fights at 205, and he's even fought some fights at heavyweight. So, you know, it's something to consider. As far as matchups go for Rockhold, look, you know, moving forward, I think there's really only two fights that make sense, probably. And the first being Yoel Romero. Even though Romero's coming off a loss, you know, he's coming off of a fight against the interim champ Robert Whittaker, Bobby Knuckles. So, you know, he's not a position where it's like, hey, you just lost to some random, you know, number seven guy like Derek Brunson or something. You just lost to the guy who's the champ, and who many people believe will win out when defending the interim title, or unifying rather the interim title in the UFC undisputed middleweight title with the winner of Bisping GSP. You know, Yoel Romero, I think, makes the most sense since Rockhold hasn't fought him. The problem is the top of that division is sort of in a logjam, because you have Whitaker waiting for the winner of this fight between GSP and Michael Bisping. If Michael Bisping wins this fight, there's rumors that he'll retire. He's saying he might retire either way. And then what? Then they just hand the belt to Whitaker? Or do they at that point say, hey, Luke, step in here and fight this guy? I mean, that would make sense, but boy, you're asking him to wait for an awful lot of stuff to happen. It's not too far off, since UFC 217 is about a month away. I think it's about a month away, maybe 2 months. Anyhow, it's not a ton of time, but you're really hoping against hope that this is going to make sense and it's going to fall into place for you. I would love to see that. I'd love to see Luke Rockhold fight Robert Whittaker. I think that's the fight most real mixed martial arts fans would want to see. It makes so much sense. But I would still really like to see him get a rematch with Michael Bisping. You know, Bisping has one win over him. He has one win over Bisping, and everybody loves a rubber match. And, you know, especially when you have an unlikable guy like Michael Bisping, a guy that people love to hate. So, you know, I mean, I think that would be fun too. But realistically, Bisping and GSP have a dance. Robert Whittaker has the winner of that fight. And you're kind of left wondering, you know, what's going to happen for Rockhold. I don't imagine he wants to sit around another 15 months. So, you know, maybe he is, in a sense, forced in there to fight Yoel Romero, which would be a dangerous matchup. I mean, dangerous matchup for anyone. Yoel Romero is incredibly explosive, has knockout power. He's super athletic, has great judo. But, you know, Luke Rockhold has decent judo and good wrestling, and his top game is phenomenal. If he could get Yoel on the ground, I don't see how off his back he has anything for Rockhold. You know, on his feet, he's obviously super explosive and can knock anybody out. He's shown power that's rare in the UFC. He's had knockouts that are terrifying. His knockout of Chris Weidman was pretty scary. I mean, it really. In watching it, I was kind of taken aback by how intense the knockout was. I felt really bad for Weidman, but goddamn, Yoel Romero is freaky scary, and he can lay you out. But you know, skill for skill, if Rockhold's striking is on point the way it can be, he's gonna dominate Yoel Romero. You know, I just don't see what tools Romero brings to the table aside from explosiveness and good judo that are going to, you know, that are going to match up to what Luke Rockhold can do. You know, maybe Rockhold is at a disadvantage in that one of his biggest weapons is kicks, and Romero can't really, you know, if he's throwing kicks against Romero, Romero is going to be able to catch those and potentially take him down. But you know, I mean, that's a risk you have to be willing to take. You know, I think that's an interesting fight. Outside from that, though, I mean, really, there's not a whole lot going on in the 185-pound division. You know, you do have Chris Weidman, who's coming off a win of Kelvin Gastelum, but Chris Weidman lost three fights in a row prior to that, and I don't think it makes sense for the UFC or for Chris Weidman to jump in there with Luke Rockhold and potentially lose and be 1-4 in your last five fights. That's no way to move up in the rankings. It's certainly no way to get another title shot. Being ranked number five, Chris Weidman is the guy who people in the top 10 are probably eyeing and gunning for. You know, so realistically, I think the benefit for Luke Rockhold wouldn't be there. But if Luke Rockhold wanted to fight a guy like Derek Brunson, a guy who's ranked number 7, Derek Brunson is a young guy who, you know, he's been a little bit up and down, but realistically, he's been pretty highly touted. People want to see what he has to offer. If there's no other fights available, you know, I don't think that's a bad fight for Luke Rockhold. I mean, it's a very winnable fight for him, and I think it's an incredible test for Derek Brunson. So, you know, if Brunson wanted to move up and test his skills against a guy like Rockhold, I think it would be huge for him. And if he could get that win, it would be the signature win he needed to potentially make his way into the top 5. And, you know, maybe Rockhold drops out and, you know, we're talking about a different story, but I just don't see how that goes. And with Yoel Romero being ranked number 2 and Rockhold number 3, I think that's the fight that happens. And, you know, the winner of that fight gets the winner of Whitaker and whoever he fights, obviously. And, you know, everyone will be happy. You know, if it's Luke Rockhold versus Robert Whitaker, I think that's what the fans would really want to see. I mean, that's what I'd want to see now. I don't really care if GSP and Bisping fight. I don't look at that as a fight that really, really matters in terms of championships. It's clearly more of a cash grab, and it doesn't really make a huge difference to me. But I would like to see it, you know, just as a spectacle. You know, it's going to be one of those fights where I'm waiting for, you know, just to see what happens. You know, what happens to GSP? How's he really look? Is he, you know, is he incredible at 185 pounds? How's Bisping look coming off this again extended layoff? You know, who knows? I mean, it could be a good fight, but realistically, I don't know that it's going to be a fight that that's going to drive fans to the arena the way the UFC hopes. You know, it's one of those things where if it's you know, if it's happening in Canada, then hey, you know, a lot of GSP fans are going to show up. But this fight's in New York, and I don't know how well a British guy and a French Canadian guy are going to sell seats in New York. But, you know, lucky for them, they will have Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw fighting after, you know, just before them. And just before that, you have Joanna Jędrzejczyk fighting Rose Namajunas, and you know, that's an incredible fight as well. You know, the card is shaping up to be a pretty decent card. You know, you have a lot of young talent on there, in addition to some really established guys like Stephen Thompson will be fighting Jorge Masvidal. That's a really great fight. A lot of people would love to see that. I know I would. You know, so I mean, it's certainly going to help to move. It's going to help to move tickets, but I just don't see how your headlining fight in an arena in New York is a French Canadian guy and a British dude. And it's a, you know, Michael Bisping is not a well-liked dude. So you're asking people to come pay money to watch a guy they don't like fight for the first time in like a year and a half. And I just don't see how that makes sense. So whatever. I mean, we'll see what happens with that one. But, you know, I've said it a number of times. Michael Bisping is a world-class fighter who is very much overlooked in a lot of ways. People don't realize what a tough fight he is for so many fighters. You know, a lot of fighters who have fought him have said he's their, you know, he's certainly one of their toughest opponents, if not the toughest opponent they've ever faced. I mean, you know, he has a career that a lot of guys would just die for. You know, people would love to have the type of success he's had. You know, we're talking about a guy who's got 30 wins and 7 losses, and you know, the vast majority of them are inside the UFC. I think he only had something like 10 fights prior to entering the UFC. So, you know, inside the octagon, he's got far more wins than losses. He's won like 5 fights in a row. You know, he's an exceptional fighter, and he has the benefit of having fought. This is, I don't want to say benefit, but I don't know how else to say it. Bisping has fought a lot of dudes who have been accused of using steroids, or who have been on TRT, or who, you know, just dudes who don't pass the eyeball test, and that's unfortunate for him. But he fought in that era, so you're going to have to fight those guys. And I'm not saying you have to cheat. like some of them did, or that you have to get the therapeutic use exemption like some of these other fighters did. But it's hard to complain about it when it's hard to complain about it if that's the era you came up in. And so, you know, it's unfortunate for him. You know, he had a loss to Chael Sonnen at a time when, you know, Sonnen was potentially using steroids. He's got a loss to Vitor Belfort at that same time. You know, he's got a win over Kung Lee, who some people have said in the past may or may not have looked the part of a steroid user. You know, some say it's just the angle of the photo. Others say, no way, look at how he looks. That doesn't make any sense. You know, so, you know, also Wanderlei Silva, you know, Dan Henderson in their first fight when Hendo landed the H-bomb, heard around the world at UFC 100. You know, Dan Henderson is one of the very first guys to use TRT, and may very well be one of the only guys who genuinely needed it. That's, you know, that's according to, you know, just some people behind the scenes who you talk to, or who I have talked to, I should say. But really, you know, Bisping's had a great career, and win or lose, people are still going to hate his guts. He's always going to be the bad guy. I kind of love him for that. You know, I don't dislike him. He just comes off as such an arrogant prick. It's so hard to, it's so hard to want to root for him, because he doesn't come off like a bad guy. Like when you think of wrestling, you think of Ric Flair and what a great bad guy he was, or you know, the way Chael Sonnen did it in the cage when he came out and said he was the bad guy, and he put on this whole persona that was, you know, it was fun to watch. But Michael Bisping comes off as a dick because he's kind of a dick, and you know, that's something he's going to have to deal with. It seems to bother the hell out of him, but I don't see how he doesn't understand why people feel that way about him. It's kind of the same with Dominic Cruz. You know, he comes off as really arrogant, and people don't necessarily gravitate towards him. They think he's kind of an arrogant prick, and he's like, why the hell would people think I'm an arrogant prick? It's like, dude, because you are an arrogant prick. You know, like if 20 people tell you you're an arrogant prick, and for some reason you look in the mirror and don't realize that, then, you know, that's on you. In Michael Bisping's case, you know, he's an asshole, and, you know, going back to when he spat in the corner of, Jorge Rivera, you know, just being disrespectful, and, you know, people aren't going to dig that about you, no matter what you do. Luke Rockhold, he has a little bit of that too. You know, he has this vibe where he's, I don't know, maybe where he's like, captain of the football team kind of vibe a little bit. You know, everybody says he's like got the surfer vibe from Santa Cruz, but I don't know, man. I grew up in the Bay Area, and I know a lot of surfer dudes from Santa Cruz, and I don't know any of them that remind me of Luke Rockhold. When I look at him, I don't know him personally, but I see the way he walks in the cage, and he's got this clean cut look, and he's chiseled, and he's a dominant fighter, and he's arrogant, but not in like a haha, I'm better than you sort of way, just in like a, yeah, I'm really good at this, and I know I'm really good at this, you know, kind of like the, you know, just he's got a little bit of a jock vibe that I don't think he realizes he has. And so, you know, some people don't like him. I personally think he's awesome. I love watching his fights. I think he's a great fighter. You know, most of those guys that fight out of AKA, I pull for them only because so many of them fight the way I want to see people fight. Cain Velasquez always fought the way I wanted to see a heavyweight fight. I'm just supremely disappointed he's never been able to maintain his health and fight for an extended period of time, because I'm sure that he would have been the dominant heavyweight champion that people had always hoped for. You know, but Daniel Cormier, I think he fights the way that that a fighter should fight. You know, he goes out there and he really gives it 100. He gives it 100% every time he's in the cage. He's always improving. He's willing to strike with strikers. He's willing to try to, you know, out wrestle people who say that he can't out wrestle them. You know, he's just, you know, he's got those tools. It's a little bit less with Khabib Nurmagomedov. He's super dominant, and I respect the shit out of that, but his fights can be a little bit boring with the wrestling. But, you know, I get it. It's dominant. It's fun to watch. You know, I just gravitate towards those guys because I think that camp spits out dudes who really bring it. And Luke Rockhold's one of those guys for me. So, you know, for Luke Rockhold, I hope we get to find out sooner rather than later what's going to happen with him. And maybe shortly following this this UFC 217 fight, it looks like it's November 4th. You know, if Bisping wins and retires, then hey, we don't have to worry about what's going to happen, because I would be shocked as hell if Robert Whittaker and Luke Rockhold didn't fight for the title right after that, because the UFC's not stupid and they understand that's a fight people want to see. Or I should say the folks behind the scenes at the UFC know what people want to see, or at least we think they know what we want to see, or we would hope so. Seems pretty obvious to me. But I think that covers Luke Rockhold for me. So this last weekend, my favorite fight was, you know, Luke Rockhold, David Branch. I thought it was an excellent performance by Luke Rockhold. Showed that he could come back from a little adversity and still be super dominant. This week's episode of Your Favorite Fight is being brought to you by Murder Dice. Murder Dice is a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons podcast that you can download now on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere where podcasts are available. Murder Dice is an episodic journey of 4 outcast heroes who are on a quest to stop the Overlord and his plans for world domination. If you like action, adventure, drama, and comedy, be sure to download Murder Dice now. If you do that and you like what you hear, make sure you hit up Murder Dice on social media. They're on Twitter at Murder Dice, also on Instagram and Facebook at Murder Dice. If you reach out to them, they might just send you some free stuff. The next thing I wanted to talk about a little bit was UFC 216. That's coming up here Saturday, October 7th. And the reason I wanted to talk about this card in particular was because we have some Northwest talent on this card. We're going to have the main event is Tony Ferguson versus Kevin Lee for the interim lightweight title. You know, Conor McGregor's been a little bit busy, so he hasn't been able to defend his title. Not that he was defending titles in the UFC. That wasn't really his thing, so whatever. But hopefully he'll come back and have to fight one of these guys. I would really like to see it. But Tony Ferguson, Kevin Lee, great fight. Not necessarily the fight everybody was expecting. People were expecting Tony Ferguson and Khabib Nurmagomedov, but Nurmi, as so many of us call him, can never, ever, ever stay healthy. That dude is impossible to keep healthy. I don't know if he is made out of matchsticks or something, but that dude has the hardest time not being injured. So they're going to put a guy in there who is able to stay free of injury and willing to take on a very tough fighter in Tony Ferguson. We're going to see Kevin Lee and Tony Ferguson do the dance. It's two uber athletic fighters. These guys both bring it bell to bell. I don't expect anything less than, you know, extreme action from start to finish. Should be a great fight. But backing up that fight, we have we finally get to see Demetrius Johnson take on Ray Borg after Ray Borg was forced to withdraw from their fight earlier this month. We got them back on a card here pretty quick, it looks like, so that's awesome. And Demetrius Johnson will be taking on Ray Borg to get his 11th consecutive UFC title defense. That will move him out of a tie for first of successful title defenses and put him into the first place position all by himself. A record that obviously means a lot to him. I think it's an incredible accomplishment. You guys know how I feel about Demetrius Johnson. If you've listened to me talk about him in the past, I think he's just an incredible talent. He's someone that people are taking for granted because he's mopping up dudes, and everyone says, you know, well, the flyweight division doesn't have a lot of talent. Man, I really don't think that's the case. I mean, it's certainly not as stacked as the 155-pound division in the UFC or the 105-50-pound division past, and now maybe 145. You know, you don't have quite as many guys, but you certainly have some very talented people. It's just they were never able to measure up to the success of Demetrius Johnson. You know, he's dispatched guys that, you know, that other people crumble to, you know. John Dodson had good effort against Mighty Mouse, but clearly was outclassed. Wilson Hayes had a hell of a time trying to figure out what to do against Mighty Mouse. Didn't really work out for him. You know, Joseph Benavidez, an incredibly talented fighter who people really thought might be the guy who won the initial flyweight tournament. You know, he has had no success against Mighty Mouse. It's really been difficult for him, especially considering what a talented fighter he is. You know, it's really crazy to see the way he's just been able to dominate and walk through people. And as a guy who fights out of Seattle, I'm going to show him all the support in the world because I love supporting the Pacific Northwest. It's a huge opportunity for this region in our sport to have a champion like Demetrius Johnson, you know, at our fingertips. He's a very busy guy, so he may not be showing up to all these other gyms and cross training or anything. He seems to have a program that works really well for him. You know, training with Matt Hume, and it's crazy to me. More people don't go up and try to train with him. You know, some fighters do, but you don't hear about people making the trek to Seattle to go train with Mighty Mouse. When, man, I don't see how you don't go train with that guy. I mean, his championship pedigree is crazy, and you know, you could learn a lot from the guy. I mean, his movement in fights has changed dramatically. His ability to switch stances, to throw combinations, to chain strikes and takedowns, it's off the charts. And if you know, if you really want to see, you know, you had a lot of people talking about what a great boxer Floyd Mayweather is. I think that as good as Floyd Mayweather is in boxing, you know, in terms of his footwork and watching the way he can outclass someone in a pure boxing match, I think in a pure mixed martial arts fight, you're gonna see everything you'd ever want to see if you watch Demetrius Johnson fight. You know, in his last five or six fights, they've just been really, really incredible to me. You know, I get it. Some of y'all don't like watching these little guys fight. I understand some people think Mighty Mouse can be a little boring. He's turned it up, though. He's been finishing fights, and, you know, he's doing what people are... When people were critical, he's answering the call, and he's coming back and finishing fights. So, for me, that fight is super worth watching. I would order this card just for that fight. But you do have another title fight on there, and that makes all the difference in the world for some people. Certainly makes a difference for one half of my household. So I'm glad to see that we have two title fights. But beyond that, we have the return of another Northwest fighter and someone who has recently come to the Portland area to make her camp here, and that's Paige VanZant. So really excited to see what Paige brings to the table now that she's been training here in Portland with Gracie Baja. I've had time to talk with Fabiano Scherner, the head coach at Gracie Baja, and he said very positive things about, you know, what he expects for Paige. I think it'll be a really refreshing break for her to come into the cage with a skill set that she's picked up from a new group of people. You know, that's always helpful for young fighters when they can take in an experience in a new camp. The change of scenery seems to be doing her well, as far as I can tell. I haven't had a chance to talk with her personally, but the fighters that I do talk to seem to think that she seems to be enjoying her time here. She's working with really talented fighters, and that gym at Gracie Baja is really on a hot streak right now. You know, a lot of these guys are really on their way up, so she's able to train with young, talented fighters who are on the same path as her versus guys who are already established and in the UFC and doing their own thing. You know, that's you know, there's something to that trading with those guys, but it certainly will make a difference when you're training with people who have the same projection as you, and they're, you know, they're trying to peak at the same time as you. That's going to make a huge difference. And if you walk into Gracie Baja on Saturdays and you see all the people sparring, I mean, you just see killers in there, man. So I'm excited to see what she brings to the table. I know Uriah Faber got here to Portland today. I'm going out on a limb and I'm guessing it's to help with the end of her camp. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody about it, but he is here, and I did see some pictures of him online, and he was over at Gracie Baja. So, you know, help round out the game. He's obviously got a keen eye for fighting, you know, championship pedigree, a guy who's won at every level. But Paige VanZant is going up against a dangerous veteran in Jessica Ai, who needs a win about as bad as anybody in the 115-pound division. And I think it will be a very interesting fight for both of these fighters, because Jessica Ai, while she has... she has great hands. Her striking, her striking has gotten remarkably better over her career in the UFC. She was able to really put it on display when she fought Miesha Tate. The first round and a half or so of her fight with Miesha Tate, she really did a great job of boxing. It's just that Miesha Tate adjusted quite a bit better, and that made a difference, a huge difference in that fight, obviously, because Jessica ended up losing the fight. But what Jessica Ai does bring to the table is toughness. She's very tough. She's hard to put away. People don't necessarily finish her easily. Her takedown accuracy is pretty high. Her takedown defense is really high. I mean, she has like a 62% takedown defense, which is really good, especially when you consider going up against Paige VanZant. Paige only has like a 42% takedown defense inside the UFC, and her takedowns have not been incredibly successful. So, you know, that's something to watch in this fight. But what Paige VanZant brings to the table is something that is hard to measure. Paige has a tenacity in her fights that a lot of people, you know, a lot of people look at it and they go, oh, well, you can't really measure this. And it's, you know, tenacity is only going to get you so far and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, man, in the fights that she's been successful, she has used this toughness and this tenacity to get wins over people that some would have thought would have been difficult fights for her. And I mean, like her fight against Felice Herring, man, she really showed that she has an ability to get into third gear and go beyond where her opponent goes. And that's something that is really hard to emulate in practice for fighters. It's something that's, it's just this ability that some people have and some people can turn it on. A young Joe Lozon had this same type of thing where he'd get in the cage and he just had this weird edge where he just could get in there and put it in a different gear than the other guy. And he might not have necessarily been faster, but he was working harder for positions and he was able to get into these weird spots. And Paige can do that, man. And not to mention, man, she's willing to take a little to give a little. She's not afraid to get in there and mix it up. And I think that's going to be an advantage for her in this fight. If she's willing to get inside the pocket on Jessica Ai, if she wants to stand in a strike with her, you know, she's going to have to eat a punch or two. And if she can get inside on Jessica Ai and land some body shots and potentially put Ai on her back and, you know, work her top game, it's going to be a long night for Jessica Ai. I think it's a very competitive fight, to be completely honest, and I'm really interested to see what happens. Both of these fighters would love to get a win here. Paige VanZant is coming off a loss to Michelle Waterson. It was a pretty one-sided fight for Michelle Waterson. She did a really good job of just going in there and kind of beating the brakes off Paige a little bit. You know, so that's going to be, and you know, while the one loss is bad and you don't want to be coming in loss off a loss, man, Jessica Ai really has had a string of defeats, and this is probably her last shot in the UFC. If she can't get the win here, she's likely going to be heading back down to Invicta, or maybe, you know, she may very well get cut if she has a loss here. I'd hate to see that. I love watching her fights. I think she's a great fighter. But man, she's not had the success in the UFC that she would have expected. Her first fight in the UFC, she had a win over Sarah Kaufman, but it was overturned because she tested positive for marijuana. Then she had a split decision loss to Alexis Davis. Then she did have a win over Leslie Smith, but then she had the disappointing loss to Miesha Tate. Then she had a disappointing loss to Juliana Pena. Then she had another very disappointing loss to Sarah McMahon. And then she lost the split decision to Betch Koheya in her last fight. And then her last scheduled fight fell out. It ended up not happening. And, you know, I'm sure that was very disappointing for her because, you know, she's really putting all of her eggs in this basket. I mean, she is in an absolute must-win position. So, you know, that's something to look out for, because when a fighter has their back against the wall, sometimes they're going to go in there and deliver a once-in-a-lifetime performance. You know, for Jessica Ai, that's what she's going to have to do. For Paige VanZant, I think she has to be patient, but she has to be, she has to be willing to get inside and, you know, potentially get Jessica Ai on her back and work her top game. And I imagine her jiu-jitsu has improved considerably since spending her time at Gracie Baja. You know, working down at Team Alpha Male, I'm sure is great. But when you have a world champion like Fabiano Scherner working with you, and you have guys like Warren Brooks and Andrew Marshall, you know, these guys at Gracie Baja who are just incredible coaches and very high level black belts, you're certainly going to be put in a position to show off a little bit on top and show people what you've learned and what you've been up to. So, you know, for Paige, I imagine it would be a real feather in her cap to get in there and get a great submission win. I think the UFC definitely would want that. Paige being 7-3, they really need to build her up a little bit. You know, they put her in a tough spot in her last fight when they asked her to step in there against Michelle Waterson. I really think Paige VanZant is a super talented fighter. I love the heck out of her when she's in the cage. She's very entertaining, but to put her in there with Michelle Waterson, just like two fights after she had this loss to Rose Namajunas, I think that's tough. You know, in the UFC's defense, Paige VanZant came in and went win, 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 three wins in a row, three dominant wins. But man, just because she looks the part doesn't mean you have to sell her yet. I think Paige is, I mean, being a young fighter, you know, if they could bring her along a little more slowly, it would make a lot of sense. I think this matchup with Jessica Ai is kind of just what she needs. She really needs to get a win. Right now she's 1-2 in her last three fights. And I know she's not accustomed to losing and she doesn't want to lose. But you know, if they put her in there with Jessica Ai and then they turn around and they dump her in there, you know, her next fight with Karolina Kowalkiewicz, she's going to be in a position where she's fighting a fighter who has a lot more experience than her, and there's a good chance she's going to be a huge underdog in that fight. And I don't think that's what the UFC wants for Paige. I think they want to bring her along and build her up a little bit. I don't know how long Paige VanZant intends to fight. You know, outside of the sport, she's already very popular, having done so well on Dancing with the Stars, and you know, she's a charming person, and she has a lot of charisma. So, I mean, she could certainly do other things, and getting punched in the face isn't for everyone. You know, obviously Paige has a love for the sport, and I hope that she does continue to stick it out and stick with the UFC. I think if they build her up the right way, she's gonna surprise a lot of folks. And you know, down the line, she could challenge for a title. But obviously, right now, no one is going to beat Joanna Jędrzejczyk. I don't see who's going to do it. I love Rose Namajunas. I think she's an incredible fighter, and maybe she has a chance. But God damn, man, Joanna Champion is so good. I just don't see that happening. And so, you know, Paige needs to wait it out if she expects to get in there and contend for a title shot with someone like Joanna Champion. You know, but I think Paige is coming along, and I really can't wait to see what skills she's added to her arsenal since coming up to Portland. I'm just excited to see what happens. So, you know, that card is really exciting for me. And, you know, aside from that fight, another fight that's on that card, we have another Oregonian on that card. We have Evan Dunham on the card. He's taking on Beneil Dariush. Man, that guy's very tough. It's going to be a hard fight for Evan Dunham. You know, Evan's a guy who originally is from Eugene. Now he's based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. He's got a jiu-jitsu school down there. I know that's where he makes his home, but you guys know as well as I do, you Oregonians are prideful. So I'm sure Evan, you know, wakes up in the morning and knows that he's from Oregon. So it'll be another really interesting fight, and a couple of guys in the 155 pound division that people want to see fight. They always bring it. Evan Dunham is never in a boring fight. Beneil Dariush is, he's just one or two fights away. And, you know, at 14-3, he's somebody that could genuinely make a run at the lightweight title. I know he's ranked 12th right now, but if he can break off three or four in a row, you know, he'll crack the top five before you know it. And getting a win against a tough veteran like Evan Dunham, man, that's really saying a lot. You know, Evan Dunham's been in the UFC for what feels like 10 years at least. And, you know, he's still number 14 in the lightweight division. You know, he's just a tough guy. So I think this fight will be another crowd pleaser. So really, an action-packed card, not getting a lot of hype since we have GSP and Michael Bisping, you know, just a little while after, a month later. You know, for me, UFC 216 looks like a great card. I can't wait to watch it. I can't wait to support you Northwest fighters. I hope that I've hyped you guys up on it a little bit. I hope I didn't put you to sleep talking all by myself. If you guys have any questions or anything and you want to reach out to me, please remember you can hit me up on social media. You can get in touch with me at David Golden MMA on Twitter. You can be sure to like Your Favorite Fight on Facebook, Instagram as well. You know, jump on there and show some support. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Until we meet again, I say it every time. There's a lot of great fights out there. It can be hard to pick just one, but think about it. What's your favorite fight?